We are live. Welcome to this week's episode of our Bakersfield Mastermind, joined as always by the wonderful Juanita Webb and Scott Thor. They are joining me today, and we are continuing this conversation about, so over the last couple of weeks, right, we've talked about side hustle secrets, and then we've talked about marketing and some of those strategies. And now we're talking about what are the necessary qualities and traits that you have to have as a business owner. And what are the things that we have to be able to know or to discuss or be experts in so that you can eventually start to grow and build this business? And so we want to focus on that today. Who do you have to be as the business owner? And Juanita, I'd love for you to just open it up with some general thoughts and maybe some insights that you've had over your career as a, boy, this is something I had to learn very quickly once I got serious about building my business.
Yeah. And I appreciate the question because, you know, and you mentioned the word, you know, we have to be experts at this or that. And it's like, the first time somebody said, well, you're the expert one. I am? Okay. Well, I guess, you know, it was like, I never considered that to be my, you know, my role. And so even understanding how our clients perceive us can be really important as well. So like for us, because the three of us are all doing consulting, it's not like we have a product that we walk out and sell to a client other than our service, but we have to understand how our clients perceive us and what they expect from us. And so when we walk in, we know how they're going to expect that service to be provided or that the information that we're providing. So the word expert always kind of sets me off. It's like, really? I'm the expert? You know, I just never, I guess, have seen myself that way. But as some of the other qualities that have been important for me have just been really maintaining my values. You know, the integrity, the honesty, making sure that clients are aware of what kind of the level of work or the level of product that they will get from me. I mean, there are times when it's not just my verbal consult that they're getting. There are times when they'll ask me to write a report or, you know, handle some kind of project for them. I always want them to know what the level of expectation that they can have for the quality of the product. I mean, I think that's been one of my trademarks. I think that the clients that I hear or that I haven't heard from somebody in a long time, they'll call me back and say, well, you know, Juanita, I just need the quality of work that you do. And that's many times how I pick up on extra clients. So it's really just, number one, knowing who we are and what our strengths are, what it is that we're trying to portray to our clients. And for the three of us, because we're all consultants, we do have to be the expert. And we do have to portray that we know our subject matter, that we know our, you know, our the information that we're sharing. So for us, we do have to be experts. But if you're selling a product, then you just need to be on top of your game and really making sure that you can define or explain the uses, the benefits, why your product is better than someone else's, why they should go with yours. And I think that kind of leads into some of the other discussions we're going to have about like the elevator pitch and how do we, you know, do that? How do we, you know, network with people and let them know what we do? So I'll stop and let Scott share from his perspective and then Justin, you from yours. But that's just some general insights from my side.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with Juanita that we have to be viewed as the experts. You know, we're going to talk about some ways of doing that, speaking, you know, doing exactly what we're doing right here, right now, because people look to us to help. And I think one of my values for my business and for my family is helping first. So I think as a business owner, you have to always be thinking about how you can help, how you can add value. That's ultimately what it comes down to is what is my, you know, you've probably heard the term value proposition. It's just kind of a fancy way of saying, why should someone give me money for, you know, what's coming out of my mouth or, you know, out of my mind, helping them to become better at what they do? You have to have a helping first perspective. And to do that, you've got to be an expert. You've got to know what you're talking about. And you also need to know what customers care about, you know, what's most important to them. So sometimes, you know, who do I need to be as the business owner? Depends on who your customers are and what's important to them. So I think one of the things, I just did a workshop this morning with a bunch of folks, and we talked about one of the keys to success, or a few of the first keys are understanding who are you trying to serve, who are your customers, and what do they care about. And once you start to understand that, then you can start to determine how is my expertise, my experience helpful in helping them accomplish what's important to them. So as a business owner, I think that's that can be helpful too, you know, is starting with your customers, the people that you want to serve, the ones you're already serving, what's important to them. Because you may find that sometimes, like I have in the past, I'm spending a lot of time working on something that my customers don't care about. That's not creating any value. So yeah, we got to be experts. We got to be helping first. And another one thing that I'll mention is that we need to be one of my other values is humbly confident, that we have to be confident, but we can't be arrogant either. Most people don't like to work with arrogant people. You know, we need to be confident, but do it in a humble way, showing that we are ultimately striving to help other people win. And when you do that, you know, they'll reward you with the financial piece, you know, that comes with helping others.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point, Scott, especially I was thinking as you were talking about what being clear on the type of person that I want to help, right? Like I often describe, you know, part of my ideal client is the person who says, I feel like I'm capable of so much more if I could just get out of my own way. And that's my ideal client, because for about a decade, that is exactly how I would have described myself, right? Like part of what has allowed me to build a business is that recognition of, if I'm on this journey and I'm struggling here, there are probably other people that are doing the same thing, right? Scott, you can speak forcefully about what it's like to live debt-free and the power and the freedom that brings, because you had to make that transition from being into debt to being out of debt, right? Like nobody would believe you if you've always had money and always had lots of money and never had to worry about money. What does Scott know? He can't relate. But it's precisely because you've been there that allows, I think it builds that expert credibility of like, well, how do I know I can trust you? Because 6 months ago, because a year ago, because 5 years ago, I would have described myself the exact same way. Right. And I think it gets at this transition. I know our second question was, and Scott, you were kind of leading us there, is so there's this idea of who we need to be. We need to be integral. We need to be humble. We need to be seen as experts. But then it also leads us into questions of like, well, what skills are necessary? And I know when we were planning this, I had like just come off a video editing session before we hopped on our planning meeting last week. And I was like, I never thought that I would have to be an expert at how to edit videos. Like spending 5 hours in front of iMovie, tweaking sound bars and measuring and spacing. That was never anything that I thought like, hey, I need more of this in my life, right? And so there's a certain adaptability, and we want to get into some of those practical related business owner skills of the networking and the sales pitching and all of that stuff. But before we dive into that, what are some of maybe those secondary skills that Scott and Juanita, you two have picked up that like, hey, when I started coaching in HR, I never thought I would be an expert at fill in that blank for people watching.
Okay, I'll jump in on that one, because when I started in HR, it was still called personnel. So, so that gives you some history of how long it's been that I've been in the business. But it was really just a, you know, helping people, making sure the employees had what they needed. It wasn't being a strategic partner. It wasn't helping lead an organization where they needed to go or do all of the analytics so that we could plan for the future. So there's been a number of different opportunities like that where it's caused me to have to grow and be challenged. Some of the other things that I never knew about early in my career was that to conduct investigations, you had to be either an attorney or a licensed investigator. So I had years ago helped clients without ever knowing that. And once I found it out, well, guess what? I had to go get either become an attorney, not an option, or become a licensed investigator. And that was the easier of the two so that I could serve my clients And so I had to go out, I had to adapt, I had to learn what it takes, what do you have to do, what are the requirements. And so I had to take on that. It wasn't until 2005 when it was mandated by the state, all of this sexual harassment training. Sure, I'd had to deal with a few concerns or, you know, in the past, an employee might have a complaint, but never to the extent that we're having nowadays. So again, had to adapt, had to learn all the rules, the regulations, the requirements that companies needed to comply with in order to be successful and meet the requirements for their sexual harassment training. So a lot of those kinds of things that I would never have dreamed when I was back in personnel that, you know, I would have to do that I'm now doing. Being an expert witness with regard to harassment and discrimination and retaliation. Would never have dreamt that that would be a part of my role in HR. And yet, because of the investigations, because of the sexual harassment training and expertise that I have, now I'm called on to do that. So it really is that adaptability to be able to just say, hey, what else am I going to need to do? What's tomorrow's client going to need? Not just today's. I can meet the needs of today's clients, but what's tomorrow's clients going to need? The challenge I'm still facing is all the technology. Sorry, guys, I'm just a little behind on the technology, but that it changes so rapidly.
Yeah.
That, you know, you just get one thing under your belt and you feel like, oh, you know, great. And by the way, I won't ask you to edit videos. My son will do that for me. He's pretty skilled at that. But just learning the technology and staying current with it so that then when a client needs us to interact with them on that platform, we're capable of doing it and we're capable of serving them by functioning on that platform. So those have been some of the challenges that I've faced, some of the hurdles that I've had to overcome. And again, we just have to keep learning. We need to be lifelong learners.
Yeah. Well, and I like that point of it's the evolution from I can handle today's clients. What will tomorrow's need, right? I mean, and 2020 presented one of those big shifts for me when I decided to go back and add HR. Like, I get the coaching, right? You can call me, and I can help coach whatever problem you have, right? Assuming you fit my kind of idea of the ideal client, and we're going to be a good work together. I can coach you. I've got no doubt about that. But then all of a sudden, everybody in California is like, yeah, but what about this HR thing? And I'm like, eventually that question gets asked enough that I'm like, I can't continue to say, I don't know. And so part of that, like the needs of today's clients, I've got the coaching needs, but tomorrow's clients were starting to ask, Justin, I'll hire you as a coach, but I also need you to tackle some HR issues. Can you do that for me? So that was, I think, a great point of, as the business owner, there's that continual tension of what needs to, you know, quote unquote, pay the bills today. And how will I have to adapt to pay tomorrow's bills by continuing to meet that service and that need that people in the future will need? Scott, what about you?
Yeah. There's a bunch of things I've got on my list here. One of them is just like you were talking about, Justin, about being flexible, or the, you know, the buzzword these days, agile, being able to flex and be what your clients need you to be, as long as it's within what your specialty is, what you're passionate about. Because I find like that's a lesson I've learned early on, is saying yes to things I probably should have said no to. I think we talked about that in a previous live feed, that, you know, early on you want to say yes to a lot of things, so later on you can know what to say no to. I've had to learn to deal with no. I think that's one of the biggest skills that I've developed over the years, is learning to deal with no, because you got to get to, you know, a lot of no's usually lead to yeses. And so dealing with rejection, I think, is a challenge, because I, especially as I've broken out on my own, where I have done work on my own, I've done work as a 1099 contracted person, where it was always a yes. You know, someone else had done all the marketing and just said, here, Scott, go do the work. But then when I started to go out on my own, I got a lot more no's than I got yeses. And so it's like, how do you deal with the no's? Because I think that's the biggest challenge of starting your own business, is dealing with the rejection. Because you've been successful doing something, that's usually what leads you to start a business, doing what you hopefully love to do, and because you're good at it. But you're going to get a lot of no's. So how do you deal with that? So that's been a big one. And one thing I've learned is that's not necessary or has been less necessary are stacks of degrees and certificates. Like I've got, you know, a stack of degrees and certs as high as the ceiling in here. You know, I've got five college degrees and probably like 10 certificates. And honestly, not once, maybe a few times I've had people ask me like, where'd you go to school or what are your degrees in or what are you certified in? But just think about it from your own perspective. When's the last time you asked your doctor, your dentist, a pharmacist, you know, any of them, like, where'd you go to school? We just assume they're qualified. You know, we care about that. But I think getting so wrapped up in that sometimes is, it certainly helped, but it's not something that your clients will care about. And I bring that up because it's something that, unless they care about it, don't even bring it up. Because sometimes it will push people away when you start talking about, you know, I'm a doctor of this or that, or I've got a master's degree, or I'm certified as this. Customers won't care about that. They'll see that as like an egotistical kind of thing. And so I'm really precautious when I do that. When I talk with clients now, I never talk about, oh, I've got, you know, degrees in this or that or these certifications, unless they personally ask. But, and then the other thing is, the last one is becoming a better listener, you know, because if I can, and I've tried to work on this over the years, is that when you do what we do, you know, we love to speak and hear the sound of our own voice, like as we all present and teach and do those things, we get used to it always being our voice that, you know, is being heard. And sometimes it's hard for us to shut up, you know, and listen. But that's one thing that will very quickly turn off a prospect is if you're doing all the talking and you're not listening, the perception is that we don't care about them, which is in some ways true, right? Like if you're just constantly talking, I don't care about what you have to say. I want you to listen to what I have to say. And there's a point, place, and a time for that, but that's a tough skill, you know, for folks like us that just naturally want to help people. We feel like we have to talk in order to help, which is true to some degree, but in some ways listening is more important in helping than talking, because you should have to just, you know, really talk very little if you listen a lot.
Yeah. I want to capitalize on something Scott said, because when he was talking about, you know, when instead of always saying yes, because we may not, you know, necessarily be qualified, or maybe we took on some projects that we shouldn't, my philosophy has become, I always say yes, but I may hand it off or pass it off to someone else. I'm going to say yes so I can help the client, but I'm going to make sure I give them someone who is qualified and competent. Admit to them, look, I will help you. I'll do whatever I can to get someone for you that can help in this area. I'll, you know, put all my resources to work on that. So I'll do everything I can to help you, but that's not my area of strength. And they're still very open to that and still very willing to then engage. And they know that you're willing to acknowledge your limitations. Mm-hmm. It's been a big plus too, that they say, you know, well, at least you admitted, you know, that's not your strength. Yeah, that's not my strength. And so they don't count on me for that then. So, yeah.
And that, I mean, that gets to this idea that the number one thing a client cares about is, can you solve my problem? Mm-hmm. Right. I'm in a similar boat as Scott, and never once has anybody actually asked to see my doctoral diploma. They want to know, can you solve my problem?
Right.
If you can, you get my business. And if you can't, I'm going to keep looking. And so one of those things, I mean, the question is still on the screen. What's the skills that are necessary? You have to be willing to help people solve their problems. Like, you either need to know what the answer to the problem is, or you need to know how to find it at such a quicker pace than they can, that it's worth that gap in time to them, right? Well, I could solve this problem myself in 8 hours. Yeah, well, I could solve it in two. That's worth it to me. Here's the money, right? Like, so one of those skills is you have to solve people's problems. And I think that's, I mean, as we kind of circle back to some of those first live streams we did, like, how can I tell if I'm an entrepreneur? You have to be willing to invest yourself in solving people's problems. And if you can't do that, you're never going to make it as a business owner. Some of those secondary things that I know we talked about that I really want to dive into are things like the networking. We've talked about business building before, so maybe not that, but let's talk networking. Let's talk elevator pitches. I know when I wrote my first one, like 2014, 2015, whatever it was. Like, I was so excited. This is the perfect elevator pitch. Nobody has ever written a better one than me. You've got 30 seconds to deliver it. And I stood up and delivered it. And it took me like 3 minutes. It was like, I was embarrassed at how bad it was once, you know, like once I actually had to try to give it. And I just like saw people's eyes glaze over. Like, I've got a lot of work to do. So let's talk again. Part of that evolution is understanding your ideal client and being able to communicate effectively. Excuse me. Communicate effectively. So part of that skill is communication, and part of that is succinctness in helping people identify and solve problems. Guys, walk us through either what your actual elevator pitch is or how you've clarified your client, ideal client, over the years to know the value that you bring to people.
Scott, I'm going to let you start with that one.
Okay. Yeah, I've got, I think an elevator pitch, or at least something that very quickly describes what you do to others, or at least piques their interest to say, tell me more about that, is really important. It's important not only for us communicating with the prospect, but it's important for us to know, like, well, what is it I do? Like, I should be able to explain this very quickly and succinctly so that I can use that to make sure what I'm doing each day is helping me do that better. And so I've got two businesses. One is with financial coaching and one is with process improvement coaching. And my financial coaching is all centered around behavior, because nobody needs math help. Like, if you can do sixth grade math, you can be a millionaire in America today. But you can't act like a sixth grader with your money and become a millionaire. So my description there is that I help people behave better with their money so they get to keep more of it. And people resonate with that because they're like, yeah, you're right, Scott. I don't really need help, you know, doing a budget or the math. I need help living out the behaviors that I know lead to financial success. And then with my process improvement, it's about helping people do what they love to do faster and better so that they can create more smiles on their own face, on their coworkers' faces, on their customers' faces, and maybe even more importantly, their families' faces. Because when we have fewer problems at work, we're more likely to come home with a smile. We're likely to infect other people with a smile. So you can see both of my elevator pitches, so to speak, are about helping people to do something so that they can. And so if you're actually struggling to put together like your pitch or what it is you do, those are some keywords to focus on. I help people do something so that they can, you know, do something else is kind of a framework that you can actually use to craft something that makes it easy to remember too. And because then I use that for myself and I say, how am I doing with helping people behave better with their money? Is what I'm doing right now here with all of you and sharing here, helping people behave better with their money. Well, maybe it will lead to down the road, helping someone behave better with their money or to find ways to do what they love to do faster and better from a process improvement perspective. And then you can validate, this is a good use of my time, or this isn't helping me do that. So why am I doing this? It helps us kind of filter out the time wasting activities we have going on in our lives each day that don't help us with our work.
And I had kind of an opposite or a different experience. I've been in, like I said, in the HR business since it was personnel. So I've been around the HR business for years and years and years, but had never really done a lot out on my own. Well, when I first started going out on my own, and you know, people knew me, so they would just come to me for service or help because they knew what I did. But the first time I met with someone and they said, well, tell me all the things that you do. Okay. Because I had never developed that elevator pitch, right? I had never really thought through. I just do all the things that I do, right? Whatever I need to do as an HR person, I'll help you with, right? But I had never really succinctly thought through what services am I providing? What can I provide to new clients who don't really know anything about me or don't have any understanding of my background and all the things that I've done, you know, for others, or haven't, they maybe weren't referred by word of mouth. So, you know, they didn't know anything about me. So that was a real experience for me to force me to really get succinct and to really get to the point of understanding what can I do? What services can I provide? what is my highest, you know, what are my priorities? What are the main things that I do? And then what are some of the secondary things that I can do for them as well? And so I've really had to fine tune that over the years to really focus on, like Scott said, those things that I'm really passionate about. These are the things I enjoy doing because that's what's going to make me shine for the client. And then I can provide these services. I can provide these other things. Those may not be at the top of my list, but if that's something you need, I'm absolutely happy to help or assist with that. So for me, it was a little bit different. I didn't do it intentionally as I probably should have, but it was because of being confronted with the question and having to try to scramble on my feet and think about all of the services that I do provide and what service I could provide for that client, that customer. So, so it came from a little different perspective. So,
and that, again, part of it is this idea of meeting the customer's needs, right? I really like Scott's, I do this so that the customer can experience or feel or accomplish this. And, you know, I think back to my, I've got it saved somewhere. If I weren't so terrified to open it up, I would probably go back and find my very first elevator pitch. But I know I keep a record of it. And I'm sure, beyond the shadow of a doubt, it was all focused on me, right? I do this and this and this and this and this because I'm so cool and I'm so great and everybody look at me. And it's no wonder that it was so terrible, right? Like, as soon as I can craft the language and say, the things that I do are this, but the end result for you is this. Mm-hmm. If you are in my ideal customer warehouse, you're going to be like, oh man, that sounds really nice. And I don't care what that industry is, right? For me, that's coaching, that's leadership development. But if you own a boutique clothing store, I create one of a kind pieces of clothing so that you can feel comfortable and confident as you go throughout your day, right? Like if I'm interested in that sort of clothing, that works, right? And so it really fits in any industry that the problem you solve has to help somebody feel or experience something different. And part of the way that we get there is not just this elevator pitch, it's just the idea of marketing. And Scott, we know and we've shared before how we're both involved in a networking group, we're involved in a number of networking groups, and the big one here in town is BNI. And I'll say this, the thing that I love about BNI is it gives you 60 seconds every week to stand up and kind of share about your business and what's going on. And they have really perfected you have 60 seconds to make, I mean, essentially the elevator pitch every week of why somebody should do business with you. And one of those secondary skills that, I mean, I've always been fairly passionate. And from this standpoint, I went into BNI fairly well equipped to public speak, given my background. Still a nerve-wracking thing, standing up in front of 25 unknown strangers and saying, here's what I do. But that secondary skill of clear, succinct communication has been one that again, if we're kind of those secondary skills that I didn't know I think I would need, has been one that has really transformed. Like that 60 second has also made me a better coach because I have just learned, say it, ask a question, shut up, let the other person talk, right? And that's really the genius of the formula. So let's shift a bit more towards this marketing idea, this connecting with other people. You as the business owner are the face of your organization, whether it's just you or whether you have 1,000 employees, people always look at the top, right? They want to see whose name is on the building or who signs the checks or, you know, whatever it is. So what are some of those things as the public persona of your business that you do or engage in to make sure that your business meets those standards and connects with the right people?
Let me jump in for a second because I just want to respond to something you said too, as far as the public speaking, you know, talking about what we need to do. We have to be that public persona, right? I was just at a client this morning where some public things had been stated and it was like, ooh, it was negative type stuff, right? Or it was at least viewed that way. And so we have to be very careful when we do speak on behalf of our organizations, and learning to have a good, succinct statement of what we're going to say, even in a training class. I don't know about you guys, but the first time I'm preparing to teach a training class, maybe on a new topic or a new subject or something that I just hadn't, you know, I'm just putting it all together a little differently than before, I still get in front of the mirror and kind of walk through the whole material. Okay. I mean, that's one of those basic skills you learn in public speaking class, right? If it's hard for you, stand up in front of the mirror, watch how you come across, watch the way you're saying, count those ums and uhs, you know, whenever they're going on in your communication to make sure you can put an end to them. But I still do that if it's new. I mean, even with the many years that I've been in the classroom, that I've done training, that I get up and speak, I still get up and do that with new material. So it's really important that we're prepared. You know, it's kind of like the old, what is it, the Boy Scout motto, be prepared, right? And making sure that we're doing that. So I'll let Scott jump in then on the specific question that you brought up, Justin.
Yeah, I think it's, being seen as the expert, as the face of your business, all the things that Justin, you and Juanita have talked about is true. Like the public speaking, I do the same thing, Juanita. It's like I usually now with cameras, you can like videotape yourself, because the other thing you can see is these weird mannerisms. It's like, why?
Remember, I said technology and I don't get along.
Yeah.
Mirror is still fine.
Yeah, the mirror works. But you'll notice these little quirks about you. You know, it's like, why do I keep sticking my hand in my pocket? Or why do I keep walking back and forth this weird way? And those are things like you don't even think about until you actually see yourself, you know, on video or audio listening. The public speaking thing is big. I think right now I'm speaking at a couple of conferences. I got my first opportunity to speak as a keynote speaker this year at Virginia Tech at an online conference. And so those are opportunities that are huge, to be seeking opportunities to speak at conferences, because you'll find that most conferences usually have more speakers than they have slots available. And it's pretty competitive to speak there for the reason, you know, that many people want to be seen as experts. So I look for those opportunities, especially now with everything being online, like both of the conferences I'm speaking at, a childcare or a child support conference later this spring. That is here in California. Well, it's virtual. And then the other one, like I said, out at Virginia Tech. So those are ways to really craft and perfect your skill set and your ability to talk to people very succinctly too, because you don't have all day to talk at those events. But then you become seen as the expert. It's kind of funny how that works. Like regardless of what you say or do, sometimes just being, you know, asked to speak in front of an audience or writing a blog or a book, especially these days, you know, it doesn't take anything. I published a book and it didn't take anything but hitting the submit button and paying a little bit of money to get it on Amazon these days. But that's another way to be seen as an expert is writing as well. So those are all things that I think are really key to, you know, to being seen as an expert in your field, you know, writing, speaking, doing live stuff like this. Like very easily you can do, you know, these live broadcasts, and it really forces you to craft your technique and know what you're talking about. So yeah, the list is like endless now in how to be viewed as the expert. But I think it's also about having lots of conversations with people too, and understanding like, how can I really provide value? How can I really help? Because people will know, like, when your heart is in it, if you're just trying to come across as the expert and to look, you know, very prestigious and dignified, people can kind of read through that pretty easily, especially on video. But yeah, there's lots of ways to do it these days with technology, especially.
And Scott, you know, you made me think. Part of this, I think maybe we're dancing around this idea, or the thing that popped into my head is part of one of those essential skills is that you have to be comfortable being in your own skin. Right. And I think, like, especially lately, that's been one of the big realizations that I've had over the last, you know, year or two. Like, I'm just really comfortable with who I am. That's not to say like I'm complacent in who I am, but I'm finally accepting of my personality. So in high school, here's kind of the quick, funny evolution of Justin. High school psychology, we had to take a test, whether we were an introvert or an extrovert. And anybody that knows me knows I'm an introvert. I love to be by myself and read books, and I need my alone time. But the scale went from 1 to 5, and 1 means you were an extreme introvert, and 5 means you were an extreme extrovert. And I actually scored a 0 on the test. Like, I broke the scale for how introverted I am. And part of that, I think, was also just I was incredibly uncomfortable with who I was. Like, I didn't want to be seen. I didn't want to be heard. I didn't want to stand out. When like I was in jazz band and I was first chair trombone, everybody's like, "Oh, you get all of the solos." I'm like, I don't want them. People would have to look at me, like, and that terrified me. And I in my undergrad studying to be a pastor. My very first sermon, I rehearsed that thing in the mirror dozens and dozens and dozens of times, and it was a perfect 19-minute sermon, and I stood up and I gave it in about 9. Like, it crashed and burned. I was not in any respects comfortable with public speaking. And now I was having a conversation with my wife the other night, like, now if I go like more than 3 or 4 days without standing up in front of a group of people, I almost like want to go talk to somebody, even as the introvert, right? And so I'm still introverted, but I've become very comfortable in my own skin of understanding who I am, what's the value that I bring, and what's the proposition I can give people, and how it is that I can help. And so part of this evolution just in my own life over the last, whatever, 15, 20 years has been being comfortable with who I am. And I think as a business owner, that's something that can't be overlooked, right? If I don't believe in the message of what I'm trying to give you, nobody else is going to either. So I not only have to have practiced it, I have to be comfortable with what it's done in my life so that I can powerfully advocate for it.
Yeah. And one of the things that I have found is extremely helpful in that, in dealing with our clients, is being able to share those life stories. Like you were talking about, you know, Scott, you probably had some debt and now you're out of debt. And so you can show how, you know, you practice what you preach, and to be able to share those life stories with them. And, you know, that's a big thing right now. Make sure you can tell your story, or, you know, tell a story about it. That's incredibly powerful to people, because then they feel like they can relate with you and, oh, she's had some experiences. Oh, she might be able to help me with some HR problems, or, you know, she's been through that before. She knows how to deal with that. And that gives them that connection that makes them feel like they can at least relate to you or talk with you. So.
Yeah, I think that's another good skill, Juanita, that you bring up, is storytelling. Being able to be a good storyteller is so key, especially if you do the kind of stuff we do where you're teaching. Like, to me, I've found like being an effective teacher, like I taught a class this morning, a 90-minute workshop, and it was like 75% stories, probably 10% humor, and whatever the rest is, can I do the math, 15% knowledge and facts, you know, content, right? You know, it's like, that's just the way people learn today. It's like, if you can't put it into a story format, if you can't make people laugh a little bit, if you're just lecturing, you know, people don't want to be lectured at these days, especially when you're doing everything over Zoom. You want to talk about, you know, mind numbing, you know, listening to, I think I saw something on Facebook the other day about a math professor that forgot his mute was on and he was doing a 2-hour lecture. And the joke was kind of like, you know, was that actually a bad thing? You know, that he was muted for 2 hours. So being able to tell a great story, because everybody loves a great story. And that's another way, like when you talk about your elevator pitch, is to have those stories queued up and ready to go of how you've helped other people, or your own personal story. Because I think that's one of the other challenges that many people run into. Like some of the financial coaches that I talk with often are just getting started. They're like, Scott, what's going to happen when they ask me how many people I've coached and I don't have anybody? And I tell them, you know, the funny thing is I've coached a lot of people now, and not one person has ever asked me that question in any of my businesses. Honestly, I have not heard that. Like, how many people, because you've coached 100 people doesn't necessarily mean you're better than someone who's only coached, you know, one yourself. So you've got your own story, and that might be a good starting point too, you know, for someone starting their businesses. How can I use my own story, like my own story about getting out of debt, to help other people see that, hey, you can do this, I've done it. And that genuineness and authenticity is key, and just being who you are. Because if you're not a super charismatic person, I actually had a client the other day that says, Scott, you know, at first, you know, you're not very charismatic, you know, and some people might take that as a nudge, you know, of like kind of a rub, but she thought that was a good thing. Cause she's like, you just tell me how it is. And, but that's who I am. I'm just kind of a more matter of fact kind of guy. I've got a lot of good stories and experience, but I think with Justin, what you said about just being your authentic self and knowing who you are and feeling comfortable with who you are, and then capitalizing on that, leveraging that, will go a long way, because people know when you're faking it. And it's no fun to fake it anyway. You know, trying to be someone you're not is hard work.
Yeah, it's more work than just being honestly who you are. Yeah. You know, and that's a real revelation too, if people can begin to understand that it's okay to be who you are. We're all different individuals. I mean, even the three of us are totally distinct and different, right? We all bring different strengths. We all bring different characteristics. And yet that's a good thing. But so many people look at differences as being either right or wrong, good or bad, when it really just, hey, that's different. And that makes us better because, I mean, the class I was teaching this morning was on diversity and inclusion. It was like, okay, you know, what's a bouquet of flowers made up of? 12 of exactly the same kinds of flowers. And one lady raised her hand and said, yeah, I buy 12 red roses. I say, yeah, but is it just 12 red? She said, no, there's some greenery. Yeah. And I said, maybe some baby's breath and some leaf. And she said, oh yeah. I said, having some diversity makes it that much better. So being different isn't a bad thing. We're just different and that's okay. We need that for completeness, for creativity. All of that plays into it and really makes an effective, much more effective team or much more effective relationship with your clients. So.
Yeah. Well, and Scott, you know, you were talking about the importance of storytelling. And I thought I was doing a training a couple of months ago for an organization. And I went back and looked at this actually after I gave the talk, because I was like, something kind of felt off. And I looked and however long my manuscript was, 5 or 6 pages, right, typed out word for word. It was like page 3 before I kind of like, quote unquote, made my first point. And there's a part of me like, why did I make it so early? Like I only had about 2.5 pages of story, right? But it was really the story that drove it. And where I noticed that it failed is that the first 2.5 pages, I mean, they flowed really, really well, right? That was a really strong portion of it. And then afterwards, once I like, well, and here's point number one and here's point number two, and we lost that drive of story, like you just kind of felt the momentum leave a little bit, right? And so I think your point of just, I was probably about 65% story and you were recommending what, 80%, you know? And so like, I could see that was, when I had the story, man, everything was firing just like I anticipated. And as soon as I tried to like, so here's what I want you to learn, that never went well, right? And so part of that is not just the letting the story drive, it's also that self-reflective part of being the business owner. And I know we've mentioned this on previous streams of one of the things you have to do, right? If we're talking broadly about some of the skills you have to have as a business owner, you have to have an unbelievable sense of drive to hold yourself accountable. You cannot be a business owner if you cannot hold yourself accountable, because there, I promise you, there will be a day you will wake up and be like, I don't want to work today. And no one will force you to, because it's your That's business. Right. And if you don't work, no one really cares. And so you have to like, I don't want to work today, but I'm going to do it anyway. And if you can't make the second half of that sentence happen, you've got no business being a business owner, because you won't be one.
Or you at least won't be a successful one.
Yeah. You won't be one. You won't be in business for very long.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting that you're talking about, you know, the story, you know, providing stories for training. I watched an interesting webinar a couple of weeks ago put on by a gentleman who used to work for Disney. And he was showing kind of the train of learning, and the very first, the engine on the train was entertain. That we have to entertain before we can educate, because they're not going to engage with you until there's been some entertainment, until they feel like, wow, you know, this is fun. I'm learning something, you know, this is a great experience. I'm being entertained, whether it's with color or music or sound or whatever. But there's got to be that entertainment before they're going to engage and really jump in with you. So yeah, that was a great webinar. I learned a lot from that one to understand that, hey, I've got to do some more entertaining up front instead of jumping right into the material. So yeah.
Yeah, our kids,
so Scott, if we're talking entertaining, what's like your, do you have like a go-to story? Or one of these things I've always wanted to learn is my presentations would be much better if I knew just like a couple of good magic tricks. So what's like, Scott, what's something you do as the business owner to help entertain or draw people into the story you're trying to share?
Yeah, no, I've thought about that actually, Justin, is magic tricks. I think that'd be pretty cool if you could walk around the room and pull like, you know, dollar bills out of people's purses or cards you've, you know, somehow mysteriously gotten there. I'm not that good. I'm not good at all at magic, so I haven't done that. But I use, a lot of stories about myself, because I can make fun of myself without worrying about offending anybody. Because that's one of the things that I've just learned over the last few years. Like, whenever you got a story to tell or a video, like, I use a lot of videos to bring humor and learning into my workshops. And that, I think, is the easiest way, because just like Juanita was saying, Disney, you know, you watch any show on TV these days, they've got a cast of writers, you know, 30, 40 writers coming up with material for a 22-minute sitcom. And yeah, we're one person. We're not professional writers. So it's like, you can't, first of all, compare yourself to those folks, because you'll never, if you're that good, you know, you'd be working in Hollywood. So what can you do? Well, you can capitalize on what other people have already created and utilize that in your workshops to bring in some of those kinds of videos. But I like to tell stories about myself, learning different mistakes I've made over the years. Like when I first became an engineer and was working at a company in South Dakota and was put in charge of redesigning a manufacturing line to make space for a new product line. And I took something that was twice as big and squeezed it down into something much smaller to make room for this new product line. And after I did that, all these big, you know, South Dakota Husky, you know, farm type boys that were working there, hunters. I mean, in South Dakota, you know, if it flies, it dies out there. They'll shoot and kill everything. You know, I did not fit in there at all, because I don't hunt or fish or do any outdoor things related to killing animals anyways. But so I made the mistake of, you know, squeezing these big, you know, 250 to 350 pound guys into a small area where they were welding. And next thing you know, sparks were flying and going down the backside of one guy, and it was just a big mess, you know? And so I've got lots of those kinds of stories. Hopefully, you know, the good thing is it got better after that. I learned, like, hey, I need to get other people involved in my ideas before I go rolling them out. So I'm always looking for stories about myself personally, because those are the safest ones today in our politically correct world. And then looking to the sources that are out there, either the paid sources or the free ones you'll find on YouTube that you can utilize for, you know, getting a point across, trying to find humor in something that helps you get your point across. It's kind of like our children's. I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and the moral of the story is always at the very end, right? They entertain, they make it interesting, and then the moral is at the very end. You could just skip to the chase and say, you know, be patient and over time you'll win. But the tortoise and the hare, you know, it's an entertaining story to get to that punchline. And it kind of works the same way when you're training people. You've got to have good material and you've got to test it out and you've got to practice, because that's the other part of it too, is like, if you don't practice, you will stumble in storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interestingly enough, your comment about tortoise and the hare and just get to the moral of the story, but you don't remember the moral, you remember the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, if you told your kids the moral and then you never gave them the story and you went along a few days and you asked them, what was that moral from the other night? I don't know. What was the story? They can tell you the whole story, but they may be able to recite back the moral. And that was the point of that Disney video thing I watched, was what do you want them to retain? And if you want them to retain something, make sure you entertain, you know, get them to interact with you, and then provide the content, because then they'll remember it. So yeah, absolutely.
And I think surprisingly, one of the easiest ways for anybody that's a parent that can do this is to practice telling stories to your kids, right? Like, mm-hmm. I noticed my storytelling got a lot better when I tried to start to tell stories to my kids, right? And so our oldest, who's almost 12 now, when she was little, I started to tell what I called her bongo stories. And the short version is, there's the fair and the beautiful and the noble princess Kayani, and she has this trusty dog Bongo, and together, like, they go out and help animals in need, right? And she asks me for a bongo story, even at 12, and I'm like, well, what do you like about it? She's like, they're just fun. I'm like, well, what did they teach you? I don't know. I just like listening, right? Like, they can't always remember that lesson, but they're captivated by this idea of story. Right. And so sometimes I think we feel like, well, I'm going to tell a story and I have to make sure that story has a moral ending to it. Right. We want almost like an Aesop's fable type of thing. Like, if I can't give them a one sentence summary of what they walked away from, I failed them. I don't know if that's actually the case. Sometimes that story allows like those lessons to kind of simmer in their own life. And we do a disservice to people if we're like, Juanita, here's the one point you need to walk away from learning.
Right.
If that's not where your life is at, then I've just shortchanged the entire process of that story. And so giving your clients, again, whether you're selling a product or a service, giving them that space to enter into that story and find their own way forward is very powerful. And I want to close with a final question here. And it's this idea, we've talked about it now a few times and earlier this episode, what it means to say yes and go out in, and to lean into these opportunities, right? That sometimes the biggest thing we need to do as a business owner is open ourselves up, do something scary, say yes to an opportunity, and eventually then we know what to say no to, right? It was the language Scott used earlier. And so somebody sitting here, they've been following us through these last, whatever, half a dozen live streams and saying, I've started my business, my business is growing, or because of COVID, I've had to pivot, I've had to shift, I've had to redirect, and now I'm facing this next scary prospect. How do you start to say yes to some of those opportunities? Well, Juanita, I know you and I were talking before we went live that we're actually starting to travel again, right? And we're starting to actually meet our clients in person, and people are starting to say, I can't wait any longer. I have to do this. And people are looking for those questions. So for Scott, Juanita, anybody watching this, that can be a scary prospect as a business owner to put yourself out there. But maybe what are your tips and tricks to leaning into those opportunities and saying yes to those things to take advantage of what's presented to us?
Yeah. I mean, that's like I said earlier, I think you've got to say yes to know what you should be saying no to. And sometimes when you say yes to certain things, and this has happened in my career, I've said yes to process improvement when I wasn't a process improvement guy. And I found like, hey, this is actually pretty cool. I'm actually getting to help people smile more at work. I'm getting to help them solve a problem. And I'm getting to work on all kinds of different things. I'm not just stuck being, like the story I was telling you earlier about being a manufacturing engineer, just focused on designing tooling and manufacturing type stuff, which was interesting, but it wasn't very diverse. So I think that being able to say yes to things is a way to experiment and know like what makes your heart sing, what are you passionate about. You don't really know a lot of times. You can write it down on paper, put it up on sticky notes, and brainstorm, but until you actually do it, you can't really get a good sense of, you know, is this something that I could be passionate about, that I could be good at? Because, you know, just because you're passionate about it also isn't a reason that you're going to be good at it. You know, anybody that watches American Idol will know that. There's everyone in that show is passionate about singing, right? But some of them are very good. So passion doesn't always lead to performance. Right. But you got to say yes to a bunch of things, and it is scary, right? Like if you're not willing to, I mean, this is another thing that you'll know you're an entrepreneur when you're willing to push past your fears. And, you know, for me, it's just talking to strangers. Cause for me, one of my coaches says that clients are created in conversations. And when you can start to become comfortable having conversations with everybody you bump into, you will start to be less fearful, if that's a fear of yours, which I know it is for many, many people. Talking to strangers about what you do is very fearful for most people. But yet, if you don't do that, you will not be successful, because people are just not going to come up to you or see your Facebook ad or, you know, get something in the mail and come chasing after you. That just doesn't happen. That happens, you know, the only time that happens is, you know, if you've got something that nobody else has and, you know, people want it, which sometimes happens, but for most businesses, that's not the case. So getting past that fear is a huge challenge, but the more you do it, the easier it gets. Cause I talk to strangers all the time now, just like I'm sure you two do. And when you have that confidence about what you're going to talk about and truly have the heart of a servant that you want to help them, it becomes much easier. It's still a little scary at times, but that's it's a challenge, but you got to get past it to be successful.
Yeah. And that's one of those learning opportunities that just helps us grow in public speaking, in being able to figure out our elevator pitches when we start having those conversations and they say, well, you know, what about this? And you go, oh yeah, that's a great idea. And you're thinking, okay, I can add that to my list of things I can do, or, you know, they can provide insights for you as you have those conversations with people. And it's really valuable instead of just sitting back waiting for them to come to you, right? And whether it's at the, you know, you're going to some society meeting from some society that you belong to or you're engaged with, right? Just talking with them and sharing your story, and then establishing the things that you can do and how you can assist them. I think it kind of goes back to the whole concept of servant leadership, right? That if I can serve you, if I can help you be successful at what you're doing, that's going to help me be successful as well. So, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. I 100% agree with that part of the, again, and it goes back to exactly how we started this episode. So we've come full circle. The big thing you need to do as the business owner is provide value and service to other people. And yeah. Once you can do that, your life as a business owner gets a lot easier. And we get distracted by a whole bunch of other things. And look, the elevator pitch is important, and being able to network is important, and knowing how to market is important, and having the right skills and communication and all of the things that we have talked about, they're all important, right? But the number one takeaway for a business owner, and the number one place I at least in my practice see people get in trouble, is when they stop trying to be of service or have stopped being of service. It's really hard to stay in business if you're not meeting the needs of other people. So with that, thank you. Go for it, Juanita.
I was just saying, and those needs change constantly.
Yeah. So
even if we start today and we think I'm meeting the needs of those clients, I've got to be flexible enough and willing enough to change. Just like I was saying, what's the client of tomorrow need? Because tomorrow's client's going to be different than today's. And so we have to have that flexibility, attitude, agile, you know, being willing to adapt so that we can meet those needs continuously. So.
Yeah. Excellent. Scott, would you give us a closing word today? We are pushing up against our hour. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next mastermind as we continue to help you grow your business. But Scott, close us out today.
Yeah. What I would leave everyone with is like what we've been talking about today is about helping first and solving problems. Like we exist because we have customers. You don't have a business until you have a customer. Otherwise, it's just a hobby. You know, it's just something you like to do, which is where all businesses honestly really kind of start, right? Nobody starts, well, some people probably start with, you know, clients before they actually start a business, but that's not reality. You know, we start because we've got an idea. We've got something that we can do to help other people. So I would say start with that. Start with knowing that you exist to serve customers, and you can't serve them unless you know what their problems are. And so you have to take a leap of faith. You have to be a bit fearful, a bit fearless to go out and start asking people, how can I serve you? How can I help? And eventually, you know, you're going to find a way to help people with what you do, what you're passionate about doing. And another way to understand what that might be is just to look at your story. What does your story tell you or tell others about what you're really good at, what you're passionate about? So one thing I might leave people with today is write your story. Just think mm-hmm. about this. Sit down and write it out. Like, what is my story? And it's, this doesn't have to be your professional life story. It could be because our professional lives mix in with our personal lives. And you'll start to see some things in your story that you're really passionate about. And it's like, how can I turn that into a business? Because when you can tell a story about yourself, about what you're passionate about, that engages other people, and it'll immediately tell them, you know, what it is you could do for them. And if they have a need for that, there's your first customer. So what's your story? You know, find a way to tell that story. And then the networking thing too, like Justin mentioned earlier, that's another great way to practice. Like that's, I'm a BNI member. BNI is another great opportunity to consider. It's like, how do you get out in front of people to practice this? Because these are other business owners and they'll give you feedback on, yeah, you know, you took too long or I didn't understand what you said. It's a great place to practice. So that's another thing I think that can really help is find a group of other business owners that can help you learn and grow. Because to do it on your own is going to take forever. Like if you try to do any of this on your own, you'll be doing this, you know, for the next 50 years and not, you know, and not learning lessons you could learn in the next 50 days. So that would be my other advice is look for some networking groups. And there's plenty of them here in Bakersfield to seek out. And you could reach out to any one of us. We could point you to our groups and that gives you a place to practice. Because the more you practice, the better you're going to get at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm reminded there's a quote by Bruce Lee. He says, I don't fear the man who's practiced 50,000 kicks once. I fear the man who's practiced one kick 50,000 times. that's really where you have to find your lane as the business owner, right? This is me. This is my story. These are my skills. This is how I help you. And once you're comfortable there, you're going to have a great business. Scott and Juanita, thank you for joining me on this episode. It's been fun as always. And we will see everybody back here in 2 weeks for our next Bakersfield Mastermind meeting.